This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome everyone back to the THN Podcast. I am writer-editor Matt Larkin. I know it's been a long time. There's really no reason to explain why we've been gone for a while, but we're back. We're ready for the season. I'm here with associate senior writer Ryan Kennedy and senior writer Ken Campbell. We've got Ian Denemy in the booth just sort of creepily watching us right now as well. And we're finally ready to talk some hockey. The season's almost a month old. It's Halloween right now. And speaking of Halloween, there have been some scary good starts for a couple of teams so far this season. And it's a fair question to ask. Which ones are real and which ones are just going to eventually evaporate and turn back into a pumpkin, if you will. Nice. See what I did there? I'm thinking about the Oilers most of all, but what do you guys think? Let's hear out of the hot starting teams. We have the Habs, the Edmonton Oilers. Who do you trust right now out of that group?
Well, I think the Oilers are not this for real, but I do think that they're on the path that they needed to be on to get back into the playoffs. I don't think they're, like, you know, top of the division good, but certainly with McDavid firing on all cylinders, Cam Talbot playing well, you know, this is the Edmonton team that we thought, okay, well, if these things happen, they can get back to the postseason. A team that I've been looking at on sort of a lesser scale is the New York Rangers. I felt coming into this year, you know, I know we had them on the playoff bubble. I was a little more bullish on them, but the fact that they're getting scoring from a number of different people, the young kids seem to be contributing the way that, you know, the Rangers hoped they would. Guys like Mika Zibanejad, Jimmy Vesey's been playing well for them in his first season. I think that bodes well for the team. And right now, they're sitting in second in the division. I can see them holding that spot, basically, for the entire campaign.
I'm going to go with the Montreal Canadiens. They're Wolfman. For you, those of you listening at home, Matt Larkin, our trusty host, is garbed as, what's the guy, Wolverine?
Well, my Wolverine. Name is Logan. I was born James Howland.
Anyways, that's why I called him Wolfman. Anyways, I'm going to go with Montreal because for a couple of reasons. I think that, you know, obviously they're not as good as their record suggests at the moment, 8-0-1. I don't think anybody's that good. But Montreal has done this in the past and kind of petered out. But, I mean, I look at the Shea Weber factor here. I mean, you know, long term, that trade, I think, is going to favor Nashville. But short term, it's been a big time coup for Montreal. You know, their power play's up to 21%, which is still, like, that's just okay, but that's way better than it was last year. Weber has 3 power play goals. I think he's been on the ice for 1 or 2 goals against at even strength. They've only given up 8 goals against even strength. And I think the best thing about Montreal is, you know, they've got a goalie that even when they don't play as well as the other team, they get a chance to win. I mean, they probably were outplayed on Saturday night against Toronto, and Toronto beat them, and Montreal beat them. But what I also like about Montreal is they've got a lot more balance up front. I mean, you look at that second line of Lekkonen, Plekanec, and Radulov. I mean, that's been a really good secondary scoring line, and then, you know, you go down the list, and so now Tomas Plekanec doesn't have to be the first line center. You know, I mean, he can play that second line role, and then you move, you know, the Torrey Mitchells and everybody down a spot, and everybody's playing where they're supposed to be playing. And their defense has been good, their goaltending's been excellent, and they've been getting really good balanced scoring. So I don't see why Montreal can't keep up, you know. In this division, depending on how Tampa does, they've kind of hit the skids lately. But, you know, I would suspect that Montreal can hang with anybody in that division because it's not a great division.
And what's really interesting about the fast-starting teams, particularly Edmonton and Montreal, is the goaltending factor. It's the great equalizer. And I know a lot of analytics proponents out there are going to say both teams are bottom half of the league right now in Corsi. So they're primed for a regression. And that's probably true, but the great counterbalancing factor is great goaltending. And we look at, I always think of the Colorado Avalanche in 2013-14. They finished 2 points away from the President's Trophy. Analytically, possession-wise, they were terrible. But Semyon Varlamov played almost the entire season. He balanced everything out. And Carey Price, I mean, we can trust Carey Price to be elite the entire season. Cam Talbot, I think, is very underrated. But yes, he's going to regress a little bit. But if he keeps up this pretty decent play, which has been going on since probably January of last year, maybe Edmonton does stay elevated, even if it's artificially elevated. And what's really interesting to me is if you flip it, you look at the LA Kings, they're the exact opposite. They have the best possession in the league, but their goaltending situation is a disaster right now without Jonathan Quick. And if you don't have Quick there, even a great possession team can suddenly look very ordinary.
Yeah, and just heading back to Montreal for a second, you know, Radulov was a huge X factor coming into this season. I think, you know, we probably had some fun at his expense, given the way he left the NHL the last time and the fact that he's been in the KHL, which is a second-tier league, let's face it, when compared to the NHL. But, I mean, he has come as he said he would. You know, he's shown up. He's played very well for them. He seems to be more mature. He's added some nice exuberance to that lineup, but not too exuberant. This is a Marc Bergevin team. We don't want anything too crazy.
No Kostitsyn, no breaking curfew.
Yeah, exactly. No high fives or low fives. But I think that's a big thing is, you know, we came in, it's like, oh, the Radulov, that's a desperate move. It's not going to work out. But, I mean, so far, so good. And, you know, as you mentioned, they're getting that depth. And with Alex Galchenyuk, they have better order now, just like you were saying, with Plekanec as the second-line center. Like, all of a sudden, this Habs team makes sense on paper. I don't think they've been that way in years.
Yeah, see, like, when they got Andrew Shaw, the thing I was most concerned about was, is he going to be playing on the first line? And he shouldn't be, and he's not. And so he's playing on their third line, which is exactly where he should be.
He's literally a championship-caliber third liner.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yeah. And the perfect guy for a third line, yeah. You know? And players, I don't think players get worse when they go other places. It's just the expectation changes. And I think that the expectation for this guy is in line with what he's producing. He should be like a, you know, a guy that's going to go out and slew foot a guy every once in a while, get suspended, you know, do a couple of stupid things, and also contribute, you know, in a big way off the ice and all those other things. So, I mean, they've got some really good balance there, and the fact that Al Montoya came in at the beginning of the year and played the way he did, Mike Condon was great at the beginning too, but I think when you have that established NHL guy back there, you can play him in games because there's no gimmies anymore, right? So you can still play him against, you know, the Arizonas and the, you know, teams like that.
And the thing about Radulov to me is, you know, people were worried about him coming in, but he was not Roman Cervenka. What people have to remember about Radulov is he played in the NHL. He can play. He was a first-round pick. He played Major Junior. He was dominant Major Junior. He knows the North American game. So I found it weird that he was sort of treated as this high-risk unknown, whereas to me he was very low risk, 1 year investment and potential high gain. So far right now we're seeing the high gain. So
yeah, the only thing is now don't go signing him to a 5 year deal for $42 million or whatever. Yeah, like that would be
he's on Yager contracts now, which is like 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, he should be on the Thomas Vanek plan.
Yeah.
Right? Like Thomas Vanek is playing, well, you know, the injury notwithstanding, Thomas Vanek was playing like Thomas Vanek because of his contract situation.
Keep him hungry.
You know, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like that, you never want a guy like that. You never want a guy like that to get too comfortable.
Good point.
Now, on the flip side of the coin, out of some of the teams that have stumbled out of the gate, you know, Anaheim Ducks come to mind, LA a little bit, Tampa Bay of late. Which of these sputtering teams are you most worried about right now?
I would say a team that came out of the gate well and then has sputtered, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. I'd be really, really concerned if I was Vancouver Canucks right now. They've really been very, very less than ordinary. And I mean, even when they were winning, it was like you know, everyone was saying they can't sustain this. They wondered how they were doing it. They weren't scoring. You know, they were playing pretty good defense and they had good goaltending. But you know, I mean, Louis Erickson so far, you know, has been documented. Officially documented as the only person in the universe who cannot play with the Sedins.
And he can't in the Olympics.
But he has it. But it's been a complete disaster for him. And now he's playing on another line. He looks completely lost. I mean, you know, they bring in Stetcher, and he's like their best defenseman at 4'7.5" or whatever it is that he is. You know, I would be really concerned about, if I were a Vancouver fan, I'd be really looking towards maybe Logan Patrick next season.
Nolan Patrick, yeah.
Nolan Patrick, sorry. Yeah.
He said Logan because he's looking at me and I'm Logan. Yeah. Wolverine.
Also, we have to assume there's a player at West named Logan Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah. Or Logan Sinishin, or, yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, if you go on Twitter at all, you can already see Vancouver Canucks fans just sort of like losing their minds because the organization doesn't seem to know whether it's coming or going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get Philip Larson and, you know, the Nikita Triamkin drama. Like, it just seems that there's way too many things going on in that market. Yeah. Another team that I'm sort of fearful for right now is Nashville. So much promise coming into the season, obviously, with PK Subban. You know, so many good vibes there. But Pekarinen is not playing very well.
And he hasn't for a while.
And you sort of said to yourself, like, well, he's Pekarinen. Maybe he just had, like, an off year. But when goalies get bad, they don't go back to being good, you know? Like, the older you get, the worse the chances are of you putting up, you know, good numbers as a goaltender. And it just feels like, you know, Rene has started that precipitous decline, and they don't have the offense to cover for it. And even though they have this great mobile D, they're just not getting any results. And in that central division, I'm not sure how far you can fall behind before you kind of say, like, well, we're cooked.
It's true. And Pekarinen, to me, I always call him, he's the opposite of James Reimer, because Pekarinen is the eye test goalie. Reimer looks terrible, has great analytics. Rene, he looks great, he's huge, he's athletic, he's got the best glove hand in the NHL. But the numbers say he's just not very good at stopping the puck anymore. That's a scary guy to have, because a lot of old guard hockey minds, like last year in THN for our goalie issue, we did goalie rankings voted by other goalies. And they voted Pekarinen third, or maybe even second, I can't remember, but it was definitely top three because he looks so good in the net. But he doesn't stop the puck too much. And that's dangerous. He's $7 million. He looks great. He's the kind of guy that Laviolette's going to probably keep trotting out there because he's our guy. He's Pekarinen. Yeah. And it seems like he's losing them games right now. And Ian in the booth, and by booth we mean not a booth. He's just sitting across from us. He just wrote on a piece of paper right now that Nashville's 20th in Corsi right now. So analytically, they've regressed a lot, which is scary. I agree about Vancouver, and it's funny. Vancouver, to me, remember the old SNL sketch, Stefan?
Like, of course.
Vancouver's hottest club is Canucks, and yeah. We have everything. Like, they have, yeah. We have rookies. We have $6 million Ryan Miller. We have $6 million Louis Erickson. We have Jake Virtanen, who should be sent down to the AHL, but isn't. It's like the team.
We have a fat defenseman who's not playing.
It's like they don't know what they are.
Swedish twins.
Swedish twins. Yeah.
Multiple uniforms.
Yeah, they just can't figure it out.
Well, it's weird because, like, where this, like you say, Ryan, where is this team going? Like, why do you sign Louis Erickson in the summer if you're going in the direction the Vancouver Canucks are going? It just didn't seem to make any sense.
And they've been doing this for basically Jim Benning's tenure, where, you know, they'll like unload somebody early in the season and then pick up other players at the trade deadline. It's like, where are you going? Are you the team that gets rid of Radim Vrbata at the trade deadline, or are you the team that picks up Radim Vrbata at the trade line and nobody knows why? Like,
are you the team that holds Dan Hamhuis at the deadline, doesn't trade him?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's walk. Like, oh, we're going to re-sign him. No, never mind, we didn't sign him. Yeah, we got nothing for him.
You have Trevor Linden saying that it's not going to turn around fast, but the year prior, Benning said this is the type of team you can turn around fast. And yeah, so many moves where you feel like they should just tank. You feel like they should just say, like, okay, we're a bad team this year. But then you do have the Sedins, where it's like, how bad can you be when you have the Sedins in the lineup? They're like, right. They're always going to win you a couple of games by themselves just because they're that good.
They're going to raise your floor.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess what you do is, you know, you tank and hope that the lottery balls fall in your favor, because you might not finish 30th overall, but you're probably going to finish, like, 26th overall. Even if you're, you know, not trying to.
And Yannick Hansen's going to have, like, a really nice year.
Yeah. It's funny. There's a verb that I thought of a few years ago, and I think this is what Jim Benning's doing. He's John Ferguson Jr.-ing. I think that's when a GM knows that his team is sort of, the direction's unclear, he's probably on thin ice, he starts making a few moves that I think are more about preserving the job in the short term, keeping the team just competitive enough to limp on another year. I think we saw that. I always say John Ferguson Jr. because that's what we saw when he was doing things like signing Eric Lindros and Jeff O'Neill a few years back. I thought that's what Doug Wilson was doing last year in San Jose, but he showed me. But I do think that's what you're seeing with Jim Benning. Doesn't know what the team is, but, oh, let's just sign Louis Erickson and maybe we'll finish eighth and go make the playoffs, or, you know, that kind of thing.
I think Dale Talon's going to be the GM in Vancouver at some point. at some point. I think he's gonna. I think that's where he's gonna end up back and
back where he started.
Back where he started his career as a player. And I just don't think Jim Benning's like. I just don't think he's into it. Like I really wonder. But I don't get the sense that he wants to do this day to day grind and deal with the media and do all that other stuff in Vancouver. Like he's a really good hockey guy, but I don't think he. I just get the sense that he doesn't. It's a bad fit somehow, you know.
Yeah, and then I mean, then the latest is well, not the latest, but you know, they last year they traded Gustav Forsling for Adam Clendenning in a move that seemed to have very little upside for the Canucks. But now you already have Forsling, you know, making an impact with the Chicago Blackhawks, mm-hmm. and we all saw it happening yeah. because Gustav Forsling had a great career in Sweden as a junior before he came over here, and it looked like he was right on the cusp. And sure enough, you know, the Blackhawks needed young bodies to come in because of their salary cap hell, and Forsling was the defenseman that did it, leapfrogging Filipoka.
We saw in the news over the past 24 hours, it's possible now that Yaroslav Halak is on the block in Brooklyn. Alan Walsh, his agent, tweeted about his usage and the fact that the Islanders with this three-goalie system, J.F. Berube, Thomas Greiss, none of them is getting proper practice time, proper playing time. And something has to give, and it appears, so the rumors say, that Garth Snow is going to adhere to the pseudo-request from Walsh and has placed Halak on the block. I mean, yes, we saw last year with Jonathan Drouin, when a Walsh client goes on the block, it doesn't mean for sure that he's going, but there's certainly a possibility when it's a goaltender who's pretty experienced, and we know there are teams out there that could use a goalie. So what do you guys think is going to happen here with Halak? Do you expect a trade? Do you expect a different Islanders goalie to be traded? What happens next?
It's funny, I was looking at the possibilities this morning on where Halak could go, and there really isn't many or any, because you have to think, you know, most teams are pretty set at the number one goaltending slot. Teams that might need a goaltender don't have that much cap space, and you have to think, like, you know, Halak, he signed through this season, so you're not just taking on a pending UFA. Really, like, I kind of racked my brain, and the only things I could come up with, and these were like tenuous at best, were, you know, Arizona because Mike Smith is hurt, but you'd have to deal Mike Smith for Halak in order to make the money work, and even then, I'm not, you know, there might be have to have some bodies involved, and I'm not sure if Arizona really cares to have Halak right mm-hmm. now. Winnipeg, if they don't believe that Michael Hutchinson and Connor Hellebuck can get the job done, then maybe you deal Hutchinson, who's going to be a free agent soon anyways, in exchange for Halak, and you bolster your back end and you go with a platoon there. But again, I'm not sure Winnipeg is going to be that sort of skittish when it comes to those two young tenders. I mean, they already sent Andrei Pavlich down. That was a move that signaled a lot for GM Kevin Cheveldayoff. The only other thing I could think of was, you know, would and could LA
yeah.
take on Halak because Quick is hurt, and what you do is basically, like, you know, once Quick comes back, he's your starter, Halak is your emergency, and then in the summer you sort of say, like, hey, Las Vegas, we have exposed this veteran goaltender who was really good for Team Europe at the World Cup. How would you take him off our hands?
Yeah, that's kind of the reason why I think he's going to end up in one of two places, either Brooklyn or maybe at home. Maybe he just says, to heck with it, I'm going to sit until you trade me. I don't know, and I'm not saying this is what he's going to do or that's the end game for the agent here, but, I mean, Jonathan Drouin did it last year with the same agent. But really, I don't see a fit anywhere. Like, it's just like, he's not that good. Like, he's not good enough to merit some big bidding war or anything like that. Really, would LA be that much better off with Yaroslav Halak than they are with Peter Budaj at the moment? I'm not sure that Peter Budaj is the problem right now. Mm. LA can't score, you know?
Numbers are
actually and in the yeah. games that I've watched him, he's been excellent.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that is a real big upgrade, and especially if you're taking on a 4.2... $1 million ticket, like, yeah. really, like goalies are, it's interesting because you seem to be able to find them wherever you need to, and then you get these guys like Andrew Hammond coming in and doing what they did. Like, it's just a really weird position. I'm not sure that I can't imagine any team would just take that salary on or that cap hit on, certainly not without the Islanders taking on some of it themselves. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see any sense of urgency for a team that's got to go out and find. Yeah. Like, everybody's sort of trying to figure out what they have still, right? So I don't see this thing being resolved really quickly or in the next little while, because there's just no real sense of urgency to it. And, you know, I mean, now Garcinoe's going to have three. He has three goalies at his disposal. One of them's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get hurt at some point, and it'll probably everything will take care of itself that way. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see that this is going to be a front burner issue for any team. Yeah, we got to. Geez, guys, we got to go out and get Yaroslav Halak because he's available.
And to me, if you took one of those black CIA markers and just stroke, is that a word?
Struck.
There you go. Struck. If you just struck the 2010 playoffs from the record of Yaro Halak, his reputation is not nearly the same. He's ridden that run for so long. I think it's still inflating his value as a goaltender.
What about the World Cup, though?
He was really good in the World Cup.
I still think Yaro Halak will always be known as the guy that beat the Washington Capitals in the playoffs. Like, that's his claim to fame.
Right.
And I think if you didn't have that, his value, I think he'd be valued more accurately. And I agree, it's early. And the problem is, there's little leverage. When it's known that a guy's on the block, it really changes the negotiations. Teams know that Garcinoe is in a desperate situation if Halak doesn't want to play for him anymore. To me, from a pure hockey standpoint, the one team that everybody knows could use better goaltending is the Dallas Stars. But the Stars already have $10.4 million invested. And even if they were to move or include Antti Niemi in a deal going back to Brooklyn, it still creates the same problem.
Exactly, it doesn't solve it New York's side of things. Yeah.
And from a pure hockey standpoint, we were talking about this earlier today in the office. Is Halak a better goaltender than Lettinen or Niemi? I say yes, he is. But is he that much better every night? No. It's not a big enough upgrade to warrant the move. I'm sure you'll see a Dallas, if they decide that they want to make their move later in the year, it's going to be a Ben Bishop or Marc-Andre Fleury that they're targeting. They're going to go for the real upgrade if they really think they're in it.
And you know what? If they keep playing the way they're playing, it's probably a moot point.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, really, Jamie Benn, season started. You know, guys, like, I mean, it's they're not playing very well. They're not... You know, it's not like the Dallas Stars are sitting there on the cusp of first place going, okay, we've got to improve our team to put us over the top. Like, right now, Dallas is just kind of mucking around with everybody else.
They're leaky defensively, and it's interesting because...
And they've got tons of injuries.
A lot of injuries, very young defense core, which I still think is exciting for the future, but it's obviously high risk to lean on all of those young guys this year. And last year... While they ranked overall, they were high in possession, their defensive side, their Corsi against, was very poor.
Yeah.
And that's carried over, and now that they're not scoring, they're a lot more exposed. And I think, to sort of wrap things up, Ian in the booth, the imaginary booth, he's really excited, he's giggling right now. He's not giggling, but I just want him to look.
As much as Ian giggles.
Giggle for him is like smiling with 1% of his mouth. He has a little game that he is really excited about, and he wants us to play.
Yeah, it's super excited. Ryan's excited too, because this is our favorite game in the office.
Yeah.
And often in the office, we talk, and then someone says, "Save it for the podcast." So now we're bringing it to the podcast. And the game is simply, was he a Ranger? We throw out names of hockey players, and you have to guess if he ever played for the New York Rangers.
Yeah. And the context, of course, is that it seemed, especially in the 90s, that like everybody played for the New York Rangers for at least like one season.
Right.
And they tended to be bigger names that you would think of them playing on other teams, usually the Oilers.
Is that Olchuk one of them?
Not today, but...
Okay,
but
save it for the podcast.
He was a Ranger.
He was a Ranger.
He was definitely a Ranger,
So you see how we fall down the rabbit hole with...
Exactly.
Like, was he a Ranger?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll start you with an easy one.
Okay.
Bill Berg.
Yes, was a Ranger.
Ooh.
Was absolutely a Ranger.
I don't know, that's an easy one to start. It's not like Bill Berg is...
I mean, he was definitely an Islander. I'm gonna say yes.
I'm gonna say no.
No. Ken nailed it. 152 games over three seasons.
Yeah, Bill Berg for sure.
Yeah.
He was on the team Gretzky's last year.
Yeah, he actually was sent to New York after Pat Burns ran over him with his truck. You guys are too young to know that story, or do you know that story?
Vaguely.
It's a great
story. Pat Burns once said about Bill Berg, he said, "I wouldn't know who Bill Berg was if I ran over him with my truck."
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And he was coaching him at the time.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Next up, longtime NHL sniper Miroslav Satan.
That's a good.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no.
I'm gonna go with no.
He's
a Bruin, but not a Ranger.
That's correct. A resounding no. Edmonton, nice. Buffalo, New York Islanders, Pittsburgh, and Boston. Okay, last one. Former number one overall pick, one of the biggest number one busts of ever, Doug Wickenheiser.
Oh. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say he was a Ranger.
Yeah,
my gut says he was a Ranger, yeah.
Yeah.
You're all going with your gut. He played one game
nice.
With the Rangers in the 1988-89 season.
Wow. That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, you got to come up with somebody now.
Oh, okay.
Let's each come up with a guy.
Keep going?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll get hockey reference ready.
Let's see. Because I'm trying to think of ones that are... They have to be, like, tempting, but not too easy.
Right, exactly.
You know? So let's go with Steve Smith.
Ooh, good.
That's a good one. Because he's part of that.
Because he played for Edmonton. So logic would dictate that at some point he played for the Rangers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say he played for the Rangers.
All right.
What do you say, Matt?
I don't think he did. I think he was a Blackhawk for a long time. He was a Flame and an Oiler. I don't think so.
Right.
He was not a Ranger.
Yeah.
He was
not a Ranger.
Matt nailed it. Edmonton, Chicago, Calgary.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I'm going to toss out Donald Brashear.
Oh.
You know what? Confession, I don't even know the answer.
Yeah, I didn't know the answer to mine either. I was using Kevin Lowe's subterfuge.
I just try to picture him in that uniform.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to say yes on Brashear.
I have no idea.
I'm picturing it in my head.
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes, because I feel like they would have needed him to fight some other good heavyweights of that time.
Yeah. Ken for the tiebreak?
I'm going to say yes.
He was a Ranger?
Yes!
36 games in the 2009-10 season when he was 38 years old.
Wow.
See, this
his last
answer,
year.
That sums up why this game works. I just threw it out there, had no idea, and... Lo and behold.
Okay, I'm gonna go old school here. Gordie Howe. Gordie Howe.
Not a Ranger.
Okay, I'll give it to you. Technically not a Ranger, but went to New York Rangers training camp as his very first NHL training camp, got homesick and left.
That's right.
So he could have been a New York Ranger. And in fact, technically, for training camp purposes, was sort of a New York Ranger.
A pseudo
New York Ranger.
He was almost a Guelph Biltmore Mad Hatter.
Exactly. Yeah, so there you go.
All right.
That's a good game.
Go. That's Was He a Ranger.
Well, I hope you enjoyed Was He a Ranger. I hope you enjoyed the fact that we are back, and you can expect to hear from us a lot more as the season progresses. Thank you
feels so
for
good.
Listening. Happy Halloween, and we'll be back next week.